Srila Prabhupada ki, Sri Bhakti Vedanta ki, Grantaraj, Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Giriraj, Maharaj ki, Jai Nitai Gopremandi. So where are we up to in the 10th canto? Fourth chapter, very good. What is chapter 4 called? All these people, no one knows what chapter 4 is called? Good. What is chapter 1 called? The Advent of Lord Krishna, right? So what happens in chapter 1? Yeah, we hear about the benefits of hearing Krishna Katha and developing Vasudev Katha Ruchi. Okay. Then, what happens? Yeah, in that first section. And then we hear on the storyline, Lord Brahma is approached by Bhumi, takes the demigods to Shvetadvip, to the ocean of milk, and they are ordered to all take birth on earth in the Yadu dynasty. Then what is chapter 2 called? Prayers by the demigods. So we hear that Devaki and Vasudev have been taken by Kamsa. We hear the prophecy from the sky. And then Devaki and Vasudev have to plead with Kamsa, who tries to kill them. And they are placed in prison. But then, because Devaki is so effulgent, then the demigods begin to come and they offer prayers after Kamsa is killing children. What is the third chapter called? The birth of Lord Krishna. So then we hear about Krishna's divine appearance. Kamsa immediately hears about the appearance of Krishna. What else takes place in that chapter?
First, we have Baladev and Yogamaya. So first, Yogamaya is ordered to go and arrange things in Rajaguri.
Yeah.
So that the right mood is set for.
So basically, in the chapter, we hear how Vasudev transfers after Krishna appears before Vasudev Devaki, they offer prayers, and then he's transferred to Gokul. And we hear about the pastime of how he is taken to Gokul and how the Swayam Bhagavan, the original Krishna, appears and the two Krishnas merge into each other. Then, this chapter is called The Atrocities of Kamsa. So Kamsa wakes up. He hears from the guards that there is a child born. He immediately goes into the prison. He takes the child and throws the child to the ground. The child shoots into the air, actually steps on his head, goes into the air. And Durga says, "You fool, the child who will kill you has already appeared." So now we're here from verse 14. Tonight we'll go from 14 to 28. And we'll hear what happens after Durga disappears. Any points? Okay. So, chapter 4, verse number 14. After hearing these words of the goddess Durga, Kamsa was struck with wonder. Thus he approached his sister Devaki and brother-in-law Vasudev, released them immediately from their shackles, and very humbly spoke as follows.
Kamsa was astonished because the goddess Durga had become the daughter of Devaki. Since Devaki was a human being, how could the goddess Durga become her daughter? This was one cause of his astonishment. Also, how is it that the eighth child of Devaki was a female? This also astonished him. Asuras are generally devotees of Mother Durga, Shakti, or of demigods, especially Lord Shiva. The appearance of Durga in her original eight-armed creature, holding various weapons, immediately changed Kamsa's mind about Devaki's being an ordinary human. Devaki must have had some transcendental qualities. Otherwise, why would the goddess Durga have taken birth from her womb? Under the circumstances, Kamsa, struck with wonder, wanted to compensate for his atrocities against his sister Devaki.
So what are the points there?
This is quality of demons. They will consider goddess Durga. They get more awe than, you know, awe by goddess Durga rather than by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even though he had that knowledge that the Supreme Lord was going to take God from Devaki, at that time he was not considered very extraordinary. But because demons are devotees of goddess Durga, like Shakti, so that he is finding much more wondrous as compared to the Supreme Lord taking shelter of devotees.
Good.
Yeah,
Kumbhakarna Maharaj is wary of a traveling preacher. We come across several instances when he has been preaching in Polish countries where they have gone to the council for securing permits for something, and the behavior of the other person, the decisions which the other person takes, it's quite a lot, you know, it depends on the purity of the person who goes. So our purity can change behavioral patterns of others towards us. So here we see that's happening. Suddenly Kamsa is realizing that I'm not dealing with an ordinary person here. So his behavioral pattern is changing.
Anything else? Okay. So, Kamsa is overwhelmed with astonishment that Durga herself has appeared in front of him. He's very powerful. So he's not so much intimidated in one sense by Durga, because he's such a powerful person, he can even fight with demigods and defeat demigods. So there's, it's mentioned by the Acharyas, in one sense he even thinks, well, I could attack and kill her, but he's also amazed that suddenly she's just, and she's Durga, so she's extremely powerful, she could defeat him. Why has he become humble? Because you'll see in the next few verses, he becomes very humble towards Devaki and Vasudev. So why is it that he's becoming humble? What's the basis of his humility?
His plans got shattered.
He's very good, yeah. His plans got shattered. So what is the feeling which is within him?
He realizes his sister is superior of Superman's role.
Yeah, but what's the feeling that's in him?
Fear.
Very good. It's fear, bhaya. You see in the seventh canto, it mentions that Kamsa meditated on Krishna through fear. So because of fear, he changes his behavior. He's fearful of Krishna because it's predicted the eighth child will kill you. So he's fearful. And what happens to us when we're fearful? It changes our behavior. Right? We all change as soon as we're in a fearful situation. Our behavior immediately changes. We become humble. So that is why when you're dealing with an asura, you have to chastise them. That's the only thing they understand. So the only way Kamsa can change his quality is when he is being made fearful. So also you see within all of us, we also become fearful. When we become fearful, we also develop humility. Humility is only developed generally, you see, generally. It is not natural for most of us to be humble. But when we're put in the fearful situation, in other words, when we're chastised by our superiors, then we become humble. Therefore, Chanakya says, you must chastise the children, your son or daughter, and you must chastise your disciple. Otherwise, they develop bad character. Otherwise, asuric qualities develop. You see in the children, sometimes they're acting like not well behaved. So therefore, you have to chastise. There has to be punishment. And when that chastisement or that punishment is there, it develops good character out of fear. So I know when I was growing up, my parents were strict on me. Not too strict, but they were strict. They were good parents. Like, you know, they would be, if I'm out of line, they would come down like that. So we need that in order to develop. And it is the duty of the senior Vaishnavas to do that. The guru, any senior Vaishnava, is the duty. And if the senior Vaishnava does not correct or does not chastise when appropriate, he neglects his duty. So it must be done. So you see, Kamsa, he does that. As soon as he is chastised by Krishna, because he is fearful, then his character changes. So it is necessary that we are put into that situation. Brinda, work your life out, right? The whole classroom is not around you. Sit down somewhere and do your work, okay? Okay, quickly. Whatever needs to be done, then do it. So, in order to develop proper character, we need to be chastised. It's part of the system. And in spiritual life, that is the system. And Prabhupada said, actually, an advanced disciple, he can, how would you say it? Like, he only needs to be chastised to progress. A more neophyte disciple needs lots of encouragement. But a more advanced devotee, the guru can just be, yeah, you're doing this wrong, you're doing it correct like that, and he can progress very nicely. So you see in the system of spiritual, it's very much based on being corrected and taught and instructed by the superior authority. That is what spiritual life is about. That is our entire process. It is the entire process of succession, disciplic succession, parampara. Right? One must be taught by the superior personality. And he is corrected. You do like that, and then he progresses. So that is the system. So you see that when someone is done like that, if they're a sincere person, then they will improve in their character. So you see, even Kamsa, when the stick comes out, because Kamsa is so powerful, we'll see as we go through the following chapters, you'll see how powerful he is. He doesn't get killed for quite a way away. Many, many chapters. Krishna doesn't go to Mathura until the end of the 30 chapters and the beginning of the 40s. Like that. It's a long way away until... We won't even get to when Kamsa gets killed until next year. But when we actually get to the point where Kamsa gets killed, you see how powerful he is. He's not like an ordinary person. He's more powerful than all the demigods. Extremely powerful. But there's one person who's more powerful than him. And because he knows that person exists, then he... So we should make our lives easy. We should just subordinate ourselves before God. The second canto of the Bhagavatam says that your head is just a heavy weight on the shoulders if it does not bow before the Lord. So that is the process. We should voluntarily bow before Krishna. If you don't voluntarily bow before Krishna, then at the end of your life, you're forced to offer your obeisances. That's the system. If you won't do it voluntarily, then you have to. What do you do when you're dead?
Lie down.
Yeah, pranam. Yeah, dandavat. That's your final position. So you either do it voluntarily now or at the end. If you won't do it, you see many people, they won't do it. They won't bow before Krishna. Then at the end they have to.
Well, they don't do it actually. They go down, you have to face down.
You always have to complicate everything. Between you and Brinda, I can't even give a pass. She's doing one thing, you're doing the other thing. So. My life is difficult, you understand this, don't you? Krishna is teaching me tolerance.
Yeah.
That's why I come to this class, to learn tolerance. So, one time, one devotee said to Prabhupada, I don't feel like bowing down. And Prabhupada said, do it anyway, and the feeling will come. So if we don't feel like bowing before Krishna, we should do it anyway. That's the system. You just bow, and the feeling will come. And when you're advanced, you will like to bow. You like to be submissive to Krishna. That's the nature of the soul. And Prabhupada says in the Ishopanishad, the nature of the soul is we should be cooperative with Krishna. It's not that Krishna wants to dominate us. Krishna's not that kind of personality. He doesn't want to just dominate everyone and control everyone. But he just wants cooperation, that's all. He's the Supreme Lord, that's his position. That's his, how do you say it? Bhagavatam says, Param Satyam Dimihi. It's the absolute truth. It's just Krishna's constitutional position. He is supreme. Right, that cannot change because that is who he is. And our position is just to cooperate with him, that's all. He doesn't want anything else, just cooperation. If we do that lovingly, then that's the perfection of our existence. So Kamsa will not do it, so therefore he is chastised by Krishna. So, any points?
Is that like Rupa Goswami chastised?
Yeah, he was setting an example. So he told, that was just an example. Jiva actually didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah.
But we had to make an example. We should not instruct our superiors, that's the example.
But he didn't instruct
him. Oh, it gets complicated. Yeah, he did. He instructed a superior person. He actually didn't do anything wrong, but Rupa Goswami was just making a point. So. Any other points? You should not instruct a superior person, that's what it says. In the Bhagavad Gita, when Prabhupada says in the second chapter that one should not even offer a verbal argument to a superior.
About chastisement over the weekend, Chaitanya Charan Prabhu was making a point of the retreat. He was saying that even if chastisement needs to be given by a superior, it should always be given such that the receiver of the chastisement feels enthused and not discouraged in his spiritual life. So that is.
You should have told that to my guru then. Hmm? You should have told that to my guru. He didn't do like that to me. Yeah, if someone's less advanced, yeah, I mean, Prabhu's making a point, right? Because most people need like that. But when you're more advanced, the guru can speak to you anyway, and you'll accept it. But, you know, Prabhupada was not light. You know, if you get the impression light, Prabhupada was very encouraging. He wasn't like that. A lot of the time, he was not like that. He was very...
In fact, he gave a very good example to support this point. He was saying there was... one of the secretaries of Prabhupada, I forgot the name, and Prabhupada had dictated a letter to him, and in the dictation Prabhupada had said he is going to attach another letter, some other document had to be attached and sent. And the secretary forgot to attach that document and he posted the letter anyway, and then the reply came, and the reply the person had written to whom the letter was posted that, you know, I did not receive the attached document or something like that. So Prabhupada called the secretary and he asked him that, you know, he's writing me that I have asked to be attached. And the secretary told Prabhupada, I forgot Prabhupada, that he said. And Prabhupada was very heavy with the secretary at that time. And the secretary went out and he started crying. He was thinking, the whole purpose of my life is to please Prabhupada, and now I have actually displeased my spiritual master. So, but then he thought about it, and like Chaitanya Charitamrita was trying to make a point that, you know, if we might make mistakes because we are not perfect. But if you make a mistake, learn to amend it rather than just lamenting about your past mistakes or just brooding over it. So he said the secretary went back to Prabhupada and he said, yes, Prabhupada, I made this mistake, but I will again write one more letter to that person and this time I'll attach the document and send. And he said Prabhupada immediately was pleased. And after that, Prabhupada never referred to the incident again. So Prabhupada also didn't keep harping on the he didn't keep harping on it. So as soon as the secretary received the chastisement, he amended his mistake and then Prabhupada was happy about it.
And just corroborating that point, as you said that you never, you know, Ramakrishna Goswami Maharaj was very strict with yourself. But then Ramakrishna Goswami Maharaj gave you a lot of love. So when we give a lot of love, then people generally accept that. But when we try to become very condescending, just throw a seniority around and then obviously people are going to be like.
Yeah.
So Prabhupada also gave a lot of love and that's why people are able to take that chastisement. Because they trusted him that he is not acting on false ego or some assumed authority, but he's acting with a genuine desire to follow that we serve Krishna very much.
Yeah, that's the basic point. Yeah, I mean, that's the obvious point. We should not be condescending when we chastise someone. That's taken by that. So it has to be a balance. Generally, the principle is when you encourage someone, or you correct someone, you're encouraging, generally. But don't expect that from the guru or the very senior Vaishnavas, because they won't always do like that. And that's not always the best thing for you either. If they're just nice to you all the time, it doesn't matter. Like Radhanath Swami is very sweet, but I've seen him be very heavy to people. Very heavy to people. But generally he's not like that. But you know, when time and place and circumstance requires, and he would come down like fire. So it's good for us. Sometimes we have to be shaken up. Yeah. That's why advanced association is not actually easy to take, because your false ego gets crushed. It's not easy to be with advanced devotees. Okay. Alas, my sister. Alas, my brother-in-law. I am indeed so sinful that exactly like a man-eater, Rakshasa, who eats his own child, I have killed so many sons born of you.
Rakshasas are understood to be accustomed to eating their own sons, as snakes and many other animals sometimes do. At present moment in Kali Yuga, Rakshasa fathers and mothers are killing their own children in the womb, and some are even eating the fetus with great relish. Thus, the so-called civilization is gradually advancing by producing Rakshasas.
What are the points here?
Well, in Korea, it's a delicacy, it seems.
What's that?
In Korea or some part of the world, I think, it's a delicacy, aborted children. It's served in some restaurants or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, from the Vedic perspective, this is untouchable. Although these days, it's actually quite common. What it's indicating is that, as Banaswami was saying on Gopanim, the nature of the material energy is at least to tamas. Because when Satya Yuga begins, the beginning of the creation, everything's more or less sattva. Sattva is predominant. It's just the nature of living in the material world that gradually it degrades to tamagun. And you'll see now, right at this point in history, things are becoming more and more tamasic. People are more tamasic, their habits are more tamasic. 5,000 years ago, these things were not commonplace. But these days, it's like, it's common that people will act like Rakshasa. And they will think it's natural or acceptable to act like that. So it's just the nature of the material energy gradually pulls everything down. And you see with Kamsa, he's acting like the most demoniac personality. And you'll see when he gets killed, the death of Kamsa is very interesting. I mean, we won't get to that till next year. The death, it's very interesting. Because there's a number of things that he does leading into Krishna entering into Mathura. And when Krishna finally gets him, it's interesting how Krishna deals with him at the end. Because in the Bhagavatam, actually, it's a very short description. But they actually fight for 2 hours. You know, the Bhagavatam says that Krishna just grabbed him, threw him down and jumped and landed on him, just went spang, just crushed him. But it actually went for 2 hours. And when Krishna killed him, he grabbed the hair. There's a reason why Krishna grabbed his hair. And he dragged him all around the wrestling ring. You know, like the MCG. It's, you know, something that big. The Colosseum would have been that size. And he grabbed him and he dragged him all the way around. Just to show everyone he's dead. In a symbolic way, he grabbed his hair as well. So all these things, they come out in the future. So Kamsa, he's acting like Rakshasa. He gets full reciprocation from Krishna. Because he's acting horribly. I mean, he's killing children. This is the worst thing. You know, not even killing children in a, how would you say it, like the way they kill children now, with abortion and everything, it's very kind of hidden and everything, discreet. But the way he's doing it is just very open, very, very demoniac. I mean, people don't do like that. But he's so demoniac, he's doing the worst thing. So Krishna crushes him in the end, violently. In other words, Krishna says, Yeyatam mam prabhajante tam stataiva bhajamyaham. As you reciprocate with me, I reciprocate with you. So if you're a demon, Krishna will. So sometimes people are demoniac and we think, you know, what will happen with this person? You don't have to worry, Krishna will take care of them. Just like Mr. Nair, he was dealing improperly with Prabhupada. So then he died of the heart attack. And when Prabhupada found out, he was in New Zealand. Prabhupada said, I've been praying to Nisringadeva to kill him. So we don't have to worry. If someone's a demon, Krishna will get them in due course of time. Any points?
It's really sad, actually. It's really sad.
Yeah. Yeah, it shows how demoniac people can be. Comes as being. Being merciless and cruel, I have forsaken all my relatives and friends. Therefore, like a person who has killed a brahmana, I do not know to which planet I shall go, either after death or while breathing. Alas, not only human beings, but sometimes even providence lies. And I am so sinful that I believed the omen of providence and killed so many of my sister's children. So, he's understanding that providence has made an arrangement for his destiny. So when you're dealing with Krishna, we're not dealing with Mahamaya directly, we're dealing with Yogamaya, with this spiritual energy. So if someone is demoniac towards Krishna, in other words, people are demoniac in this world, but if they're demoniac towards ISKCON, then Krishna himself comes and deals directly with that person. Now, Krishna defends his movement directly, or you could say Nisringadev directly deals with the person. So you see, if someone is directly attacking ISKCON, it's not the material energy which deals with it, it's the spiritual energy, or the Yogamaya Shakti. And in our own lives, if we start acting improperly as devotees, it's the Yogamaya potency which deals with us. In other words, it's Krishna's direct reciprocation. If you start going off track, then Krishna will directly come in through his agents, then he will deal with you appropriately. So you see, if your consciousness becomes defective, then Krishna deals with you immediately. He doesn't let you go. And we all know that. Because sometimes we're not thinking the right way, and then Krishna immediately comes in, makes some arrangement to purify us. So here comes as being dealt with, it's directly by this spiritual energy, because he's being offensive to Krishna's devotees. O great souls, your children have suffered their own misfortune. Therefore, please do not lament for them. All living entities are under the control of the Supreme, and they cannot always live together. Priya Vishaka, you want to read it?
Although we feel that ordinary children, the goddess Durga, could birth from him, because Devi bore Durga Devi in her womb from some great both Devi and her husband. Asuras are very devoted to the goddess Durga, Kali, and so forth. Tamsa, therefore, truly astonished, appreciated the exalted position of his sister and mother-in-law. Durga is certainly not under the law of nature because she herself is in the controller of the laws of nature. Ordinary living beings, however, are controlled by these laws. Prakriti, Niyamani, Sriman, Karmani, Samasha. Consequently, none of us are allowed to live together for any long period. By speaking in this way, Kamsa tried to pacify his sister and brother-in-law.
So, what's taking place?
Justifying himself. Kind of justifying himself. Or it will happen. Ingrity is not accepting.
Yeah, people do this all the time. Like people come to the farm and they give donations. And then I say, thank you for the donation. And they say, no, Krishna is doing it. It's all Krishna, it's not us, it's Krishna. Krishna is doing it. I say, if Krishna is doing it, then give me everything. Give me your whole bank account. Don't just give me $100, give me $10,000. So people tend to do this. They make justification for their acts. And they speak all spiritually. But you have to act. Your achar must be the same as your pracha. That is spiritual life. So we know from Chaitanya Charitamrita that Sanatana Goswami, he glorified Haridas Thakur. No? He said that your achar, your actions, are the same as your prachar. No? The way you speak and the way you act, they are the same. That's when someone becomes potent. No? So Prabhupada said in ISKCON, purity is the force. No? We become potent in our preaching when our activity and our speech is the same. Right? We say everything nicely, we preach nicely, but we also act ideally. And that's when we become potent as devotees. Right? So you have to have both, which are there. So Kamsa here, he's speaking very nicely, but well, behavior is atrocious. And you see, if you go back to Canto 7, well, what was his name, that person in Canto 7? Hiranya? Kashipu. Right? So you read his teaching, he preaches brilliantly. He's an amazing preacher. He doesn't do any of it. But he can say everything perfectly. You know, we can quote his verses in the Bhagavatam. I mean, the Hiranyakashipu's preaching is amazing. But his activities are useless. There's no use saying something unless you can actually do it yourself. So in the same way, Kamsa, he's being hypocritical. Yeah. He's got some realization at the moment, so he's speaking properly. He's getting some realization, right? We all get realization when we go to the crematorium. When someone's dead, then everyone gets realization. And 2 weeks later, everyone's back to the same thing. So. What is it? Yeah.
Yeah.
What's that?
Is it the fear that something wrong is going to happen to
him? Yeah, he's scared. That's why he's acting properly and speaking properly. It says when you're sick, when you're in Bhagavatam class, and when someone dies, then you're sober. Yeah? When we're sick, we're very serious about everything. But when we're not sick, then we just enjoy ourselves. In the Bhagavatam class, you say, yes, this all makes sense. Right? But then as soon as you go for breakfast, then you eat as much as you can. Yeah, at the crematorium everyone gets very sober, but then afterwards then everyone forgets very quickly. That's the nature of attachment.
Ravana was also similar to Kamsa. Like in one lecture I was hearing that after Hanuman destroyed Lanka and went, then Ravana had become a little sober because it seems Hanuman mounted on the wall of Lanka and he shouted and went when he was going that I am the least powerful of all monkeys. So there's more to come like that. He wanted to challenge Ravana and go. And then Ravana had become very sober and he called the assembly of ministers and he's actually speaking quite Vedic philosophy in that assembly. He's saying that an ideal king should consult his ministers on what to do and all that. But that time I think Kumbhakarna gets up and he also gets angry and later on Vibhishan also tells. He said, you did not consult anyone when you kidnapped Sita and came. So speaking one thing, but the actions are not following up on what he's speaking.
Yeah, Ravana was a Brahmana. So he was very powerful. And he used to do amazing yajnas. All the demigods would come. No, but he had no, yeah, as you said, that he was hypocritical. No. Sita was in the Ashok garden. And he put one minister, one Rakshasa, in charge of the Ashok garden to protect. And then Hanuman came. And then he came in, the minister came in and saw the monkey. And the monkey jumped up on the wall. Hanuman jumped on the wall. And he came up and he was yelling at him, hey, get out of here like this. So Hanuman passed water in his mouth.
Hey, how are this?
Passed water in his mouth. Like that. So then he went and told Ravan. He said, there's some monkey came and passed water in my mouth. Ravan got angry. He said, who are you? I put you in charge of the place. And the monkey's urinating on you. He said, get out of here. He said, someone else go and take care. Go and capture that monkey. So then they got the monkey and they brought him before Ravana. But then he, there's a whole pastime which takes place with Hanuman. And Hanuman grows big in front of Ravana. That's right. Hanuman lets himself be tied up. They tie him up and they bring him into Ravana. And then Hanuman's tied up and Hanuman says, give me a seat to sit, an asan, like a throne. And Ravana says, we will not give a monkey a throne. So he breaks the ropes, he makes himself big, and he wraps his tail like a throne, he sits on his tail. And he said, I'll give you one chance. He said, you give Sita back now, and everything is okay. If you don't, then Ram's going to come, and you will be finished. Right? And then Ravan says, you know, attack him and try to capture him. That's when he smashes Lanka and burns Lanka, and then he goes back. Okay. In this world, we can see that pots, dolls, and other products of the earth appear, break, and then disappear, mixing with the earth. Similarly, the bodies of all conditioned living entities are annihilated, but the living entities, like the earth itself, are unchanging and never annihilated. Nahanyate, hanyamani, sharire. So where is this from? Yeah, this is straight Bhagavad Gita philosophy. So he's preaching perfectly, Bhagavad Gita. But as we said, he's hypocritical, so there's no real potency in his preaching. So we'll read the first paragraph. Paya, you want to read the first?
Although Kamsa is described as a demon, he had good knowledge of the affairs of Atmatattva, the true of the self. 5,000 years ago, there were kings like Kamsa, who is described as an asura, but he was better than modern politicians and diplomats, who have no knowledge about Atmatattva. As stated in the Vedas, Asango Hyaya Purusha, the spirit soul has no connection with the changes of the material body. The body undergoes 6 changes: birth, growth, suspense, byproducts, dwindling, and the inhalation. But the soul undergoes no such changes. Even after the inhalation of a particular bodily form, the original source of the bodily element does not change. The living entity enjoys the material body, which appears and disappears. But the 5 elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether, remain the same. The example given here is that pots and dolls are produced from the earth, and when broken or destroyed, they mingle with their original ingredients. In any case, the source of supply remains the same.
So what are the points there?
The world is temporary.
Yeah, ultimately everything is temporary. That's Bhagavad Gita philosophy. So Krishna says in the Gita, Samal, Damas, Tapa, Salcham. What's the next line? Then? Jnana, Vidyana. So a Brahmana has to have both qualities. Jnana means knowledge. Kamsa has knowledge, but he's not having realization. It's easy to say all these things. Material world is temporary. It's easy to say that we're not the body. But to realize things, this is a deep level of realization. So he is saying all these things, but he does not have the realization. So our preaching becomes potent when we realize this knowledge. Right? And what is the basic principle of the Bhagavad Gita? Yeah, it's matter and spirit. But we have to realize this point. This is advanced Krishna consciousness. And actually, if we really want to understand the 10th canto, Krishna's pastimes, you have to understand this fundamental point, the difference between matter and spirit. Because that's what the very first verse of the Bhagavatam teaches us. The Bhagavatam is only understood by one who can understand the difference between reality and illusion. So when you understand the difference between matter and spirit, then you can actually understand Krishna's pastimes. Otherwise it's just jnana, it's just knowledge. Okay, read the second. Jamuna, you want to read it?
As already discussed, the body is made according to the desires of the soul. The soul desires and thus the body is formed. Krishna therefore says in Bhagavad Gita 18.61, Ishvara sarva bhutana buddheshi arjana tishthati brahmaran sarva bhutani yantra rudani mayaya. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and is directing the wanderings of all living entities who are seated as on a machine made of the material energy. Neither the super soul, Paramatma, nor the individual soul changes its original spiritual identity. The Atma does not undergo birth, death, or changes like the body. Therefore, a Vedic aphorism says, Asango hi ayam purusha. Although the soul is conditioned within this material world, he has no connection with the changes of the material body.
What are the points there?
Siddhanta Chandra was saying in the retreat that the next birth is designed by it is a function of karma, destiny, and time.
Yeah, so we see that Krishna says in the Gita, I direct the wanderings of all living entities. So we may desire something in particular, but that is only awarded according to our karma. So we have particular desires that we want to fulfill. So when we leave this body, or we've left the previous bodies, we have particular desires. So you want to be wealthy or whatever that is, but if you've acted piously, yes, then you become wealthy. But if you have not acted piously, then even though you may have that desire, then your karma does not fulfill that desire. So this is the law of nature. Now actually, as Prabhupada points out, we're not actually going through anything at all. The soul is completely aloof from the whole thing. It's just misidentification with the mind, the intelligence, the false ego, that we think we're enjoying or in this material world. But actually it's not. We're basically, the soul is just dormant. The soul is sleeping. This experience we're having is just facilitated by the false ego, that's all. But there's no real thing. The soul doesn't die, he's not born, he doesn't get rich, he doesn't get... Krishna says all that in the Gita. No, he's not blown by the wind, he's not moistened by the water, he's not burned by the fire. All these things are just illusory. So Kamsa is giving us perfect knowledge at this point in time. This is basic straight Bhagavad Gita chapter 2. We all get like that. When our lives are falling apart, we all go to chapter 2 of the Bhagavad Gita and we start preaching. And then when it's all over, then we go back to our normal condition.
So if we get sad, the soul doesn't know. If we get sad in some situation, the soul doesn't get affected.
It means if it's spiritual sadness, like when you're feeling separation from the spiritual master or something like that, then that's real. But if it's material sadness, then that's just illusion. Okay. One who does not understand the constitutional position of the body and the soul, Atma, becomes too attached to the bodily concept of life. Consequently, because of attachment to the body and its byproducts, he feels affected by union with and separation from his family, society, and nation. As long as this continues, one continues his material life. Otherwise, one is liberated. So, Jibuna Lila.
As confirmed in the Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.6, Savai Ponsam Karo Dharma Yato Bhakti Yashupa Dokshate Ahai Tuki Vapatihata Yayatma Sutrasidati. The word Dharma means engagement. One who is engaged in the service of the Lord, Yato Bhakti Yashupa, without impediment and without cessation, is understood to be situated in his original spiritual status. When one is promoted to this status, one is always happy in transcendental bliss. Otherwise, as long as one is in the bodily concept of life, one must suffer material conditions. Janma mrityu jara vyadi dukha dosha darshanam. The body is subject to its own principles of birth, death, old age and disease. But one who is situated in spiritual life, yato bhakti adokshate, has no birth, no death, no old age and no disease. One may argue that when we see a person who is spiritually engaged 24 hours a day, but is still suffering from disease. In fact, however, he is neither suffering nor diseased. Otherwise, he could not be engaged 24 hours a day in spiritual activities. The example may be given in this connection that sometimes dirty foam or garbage is seen floating on the water of the Ganges. This is called Nira Dharma, a function of the water. But one who goes to the Ganges does not mind the foam and dirty things floating in the water. With his hand, he pushes away such nasty things, bathes in the Ganges and gains the beneficial results. Therefore, one who is situated in the spiritual status of life is unaffected by foam and garbage or any superficial dirty things. This is confirmed by Srila Rupa Goswami. A person acting in the service of Krishna with his body, mind and words is a liberated person even within this material world. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.2.27. Therefore, one is forbidden to regard the Guru as an ordinary human being. Guru sa naramatir naraki shaha. The spiritual master or acharya is always situated in the spiritual status of life. Birth, disease, old age and death do not affect him. According to the Hari Bhakti Vilas, therefore, after the disappearance of an acharya, his body is never burnt to ashes, for it is a spiritual body. The spiritual body is always unaffected by material conditions.
This is one of the points in that purport.
An acharya is always connected to Lord Krishna in his mind, body and words. And after the Chaturshloki or the Srimad Bhagavatam, anything that is connected to Krishna can never be material. That's the second shloka of the Chaturshloki. So whatever he speaks, whatever he undergoes, nothing is material.
Anything else?
This is the quality of an asura. When he was in a similar situation when his own life was threatened, he did not apply this to himself. But when Devaki is in a situation of lamenting when her children have been killed by him, he is asking her to apply all these principles in her life so that she doesn't lament. Right. But he himself took such a drastic step when he just heard a prophecy. So it was not even an immediate threat to his life. But he did not at that time realize that the body is temporary and God didn't go there.
Yeah, we said last week or the week before, we said is exactly the opposite of Dronacharya. Because Dronacharya knew that Drishtadyumna was going to kill him, but he didn't do anything about it. Whereas Kamsa, he thinks that, or he knows that Krishna is going to kill him, and then he becomes completely disrupted and disturbed in his consciousness. Whereas Dronacharya, he shows us the perfect example that we have to follow our destiny, ultimately. Yeah. This will be shown in the next verse. So, where does suffering stem from? Prabhupada is explaining in the purport. Huh? Yeah, where does suffering come from? It comes from attachment. And this is straight Buddhism, or pure Buddhist philosophy. Actually, we are Buddhists also, up to a point. Buddhist philosophy is the same as Vaishnava philosophy, up to a point. There's a point where we diverge. We go off in one direction, they go in another direction. But up to a point, it's exactly the same. Buddhism teaches all suffering comes from attachment. And I was reading this today, and I was thinking, you know, because I've had a certain amount of suffering in my life, like all of us have, and I was thinking, it's only because I'm attached. And even now I'm still attached, and that's why I suffer. Because if I become detached from the material energy, there is no suffering. And Prabhupada explains that. And for Prabhupada, there was no suffering, because he was detached from the material energy. But as long as you're attached to it, then you suffer. But for the soul, as we said, there is no suffering. I mean, this is very vague. But the bottom line is that if we don't become like this, then we'll just continue to suffer. So Prabhupada is saying that an acharya is someone who is liberated. A real acharya. You know, we say, oh, this person's acharya, that person. But a real acharya is someone who is liberated. And Prabhupada was that person. He was fully liberated from the material energy. Because we see in his life there was no attachment whatsoever to the material world. And when you're not attached, then you are jivan mukta, as Rupa Goswami teaches us. So it's something we have to aspire for. But we should feel ourselves coming closer and closer to this. It's very advanced. You know, the level that is being spoken of here, the Prabhupada was on, and it's very, very advanced. But we should, that's what we're aiming for. We should be trying to get that, become detached. It's easy to talk about, but then, you know, as soon as you walk out of the class, then it's, yeah, in the class you're all detached. Yeah. As soon as you get out there, everything. Yeah, as soon as your wife says something to you, bang, it's back on again. Yeah. Then your mind's completely disturbed. But if you're detached, then you won't be affected by these things. Okay. My dear sister Devaki, all good fortune unto you. Everyone suffers and enjoys the results of his own work under the control of Providence. Therefore, although your sons have unfortunately been killed by me, please do not lament for them. So this person is insane. I just killed all your children, but don't worry, it's just provenance that did it. It has nothing to do with me. I was just the, you know, I mean, no one speaks like that. No one speaks like that. So, this is karma. Ultimately, everything that happens in this material world to us is our karma. Right? And as devotees, we're not exempt by karma, from our karma. Prabhupada simply says, the karma you should have got is much less, that's all. Because you're a devotee, you just get less. Even one time, Prabhupada cut his finger when he was cooking in the kitchen, he was cooking lunch. And Prabhupada cut himself, and he said to his servant, he said, actually, if I wasn't a devotee, my whole arm may have been chopped off. But because I am a devotee, then Krishna is very merciful, he just gives me one little cut of that. And you'll see, as because we're devotees, you experience that yourself. I know myself, I feel like that. I can just feel that my karmic debt is minimized because of Krishna. You know, what I should have got in this lifetime would have been much more, much worse. But Krishna, he minimizes the whole thing. So that is the situation of a devotee. Everything that happens to us in the material world is because of our previous karma. We say, why are we suffering now? Because of our previous karma, that's why. And as devotees, our suffering is less, that's all. We suffer less than the non-devotees, but still, it's just because our karma is winding up. And Prabhupada explained that, just like the fan is going, but you pull the plug out, the fan still spins until it stops. So until we become pure devotees, the fan is just winding down. So it is still our karma which is taking place. Now, as Krishna teaches in the Bhagavad Gita, your karma can change. Right? Krishna says there's five subject matters, or Prabhupada says in the introduction, there are five subject matters in the Gita. What are the five subject matters? Ishvara, Prakriti, Kala, Jiva, and Karma. And only one of them changes. Yeah, karma. Your karma changes. Ishvara, he's always God. Jiva is always a servant. Prakriti is always the energy to be enjoyed. Right? Kala is time that continues eternally. But karma is the one thing that changes. So as devotee, our karma changes. The more you surrender to Krishna, Krishna says, "I moksha yishami masuja." Moksha means liberation. Krishna says, "Moksha yishami masuja." I liberate you from your karma. You should have been getting worse, but I will take that away. So then, if pure devotees suffer, that's just to set the example for us. Because Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says in the Madhurya Kanambini that the Pandavas were suffering. But why did the Pandavas suffer? Just to set an example for us. There wasn't any karma involved, because they were already liberated. But it shows us how we should act when we are suffering. In the bodily conception of life, one remains in darkness without self-realization, thinking, I am being killed or I have killed my enemies. As long as a foolish person thus considers the self to be the killer or the killed, he continues to be responsible for material obligations. And consequently, he suffers the reactions of happiness and distress. So we have to be very careful because Kamsa's justifying what he's done. You know, so you can't just go and do whatever you want and say, oh, well, you know, that's just karma. And, I can go and rob a bank, that's just karma. Or, you know, I can treat someone improperly, that's just karma. You know, you can't say like that. But it can be a justification. Because Kamsa's got like this justification in his mind. I did all this, but it's just karma, it's okay now. So we should not use those kind of excuses. There are 10 offences against the holy name, and sometimes it is said the worst of the 10 offences is the 7th offence, which means to commit sinful activity on the strength of the holy name. So then sometimes devotees will do like that. You'll be committing sinful activities, you'll have illicit sex or other sinful activities, but then you'll think, oh, I'll just chant in the morning and I'll purify myself. After all, I'm a fallen soul and like that. So we do, we justify these things in our mind. If you have an accidental fall down, because everyone has accidental fall downs, if you have an accident or fall down, like Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, then you are still my devotee. But if the fall down is premeditated, then Krishna, he behaves much differently towards you. Because you're committing sin on the strength of the holy name. You're saying, well, I can do whatever I want. Krishna will forgive me. But no one likes being treated like that. Krishna's a person. He doesn't like being treated like that. It's like if I do something to you, I take advantage of your friendship. Right? You look after me and you're giving me money and then I'm just taking advantage of it. Then after some time you'll think, this is not good. This person is exploiting me, even though he's a devotee. So we should also deal with Krishna in the same way, respectfully with Krishna. Because Krishna's a person, he doesn't like that feeling. Oh, this person is taking from me all the time. He commits simple activity and he just thinks, oh, I will destroy the sin. Prabhupada actually said one time, because there was one of his disciples was having trouble following the principles, he was falling down. Prabhupada said, Krishna, one time he will forgive you, second time he will forgive you, but third time he will not forgive you. In other words, Prabhupada was saying, don't keep coming back. As he said, you're putting pressure on me as a guru. I have to keep saying to Krishna, I'll forgive him, forgive him, forgive him. I don't want to be in that situation. The guru doesn't want to keep continuously turn to Krishna and say, I'll forgive him. He keeps doing nonsense, but forgive him. So when it comes to taking initiation, devotees have to be very careful. Sometimes in ISKCON, we push everyone towards initiation too quickly. Now, but Prabhupada himself took 11 years. So if someone's not ready, don't push them. Because if they can't follow the regular principles, it'll just cause problems for them and for the guru and so many things. Prabhupada even said one time, when he was sick, I think about 1974, Prabhupada said, the reason I'm sick is because 75% of my leaders are not following the regular principles. He said that. So it means don't take initiation until you're ready. Initiation's a higher thing, actually. In this context, sometimes we push everyone to take initiation. It's actually quite a high standard in Kali Yuga. People have to be ready for it. Don't take initiation until you're ready to follow those vows, because it's a high level in Kali Yuga for people to do that. Any points?
About the premeditated part you are saying for offenses. So what if a devotee has weakness?
Has what?
Weakness.
Weakness? Yeah.
As devotees, we don't have strong determination to pursue our devotion like in the way that ideally it should be pursued. So in that case, it's not premeditated, but it's not accidental also. It's just a lack of determination to, for example, the way, it's described in Nectar instead of instruction also, that we might not have the required determination to do the devotion like as unprofessional individuals.
Well, it really has to be one or the other. It really, either it is premeditated or it's accidental. It really has to fall into one of the two categories. So if you know that you're not strong enough yet, then don't go up to the higher level of taking initiation or like that. Take on. Jayapataka Swami in the congregational ministry, I don't think this is widely enough understood in ISKCON. Maharaj made standards in the congregational ministry years ago, maybe 20 years ago or something. People come in on one level, one round, and then four rounds, and then eight rounds, and then eight rounds and three regulative principles. I think there's even a category where it's 16 rounds and three regulative principles, and then 16 rounds and four regulative principles, and then, okay, that's Guru or Shraya, then you can begin to take shelter of a Guru. So sometimes we push everyone too quickly. You have to come up to like 16 rounds or four regular. No, that takes time. So we just have to be honest, and we also have to be supportive that, okay, if you can't follow all that straight away, that's okay. But that's the goal. We're not watering it down. But if you can't follow, don't take initiation.
I'm not talking more about the regulative principles. I'm talking about more of previous conditioning. For example, if someone was attached to soccer or football.
Oh, Krishna.
And then still they are attached to watching all the matches and not on TV.
Oh, Krishna.
That is lack of determination.
That is demoniac. How could they? No, that's very bad. Unless it's the World Cup, then it's okay.
Thank you.
But the local matches, that is bogus.
Oh.
No, I was with my friend a couple of weeks ago, one of my good friends. He's a surfer. A very good devotee, 16 rounds, Parker devotee. He surfs, right? So his wife, you know, had a problem because he goes surfing, right? You know, three times a week or something. He lives near the beach, so. So they went to see Bhakti Vijayapurna Maharaj for like a darshan. So they're in there, and the wife says, "Oh, Maharaj, you know, he goes surfing." And Maharaj is like the most Vedic sannyasi in the movement. Yeah, you know, he's like, you know, wears the wooden shoes, and like, he's the most Vedic out of everyone. So, you know, sitting there chanting his japa, listening to them, and she goes, "Maharaj, he goes surfing." And Maharaj goes, "So?" Maharaj's like, "So? What did you come here to speak to me about?" Yeah, and he goes surfing. Maharaj said, "Men need hobbies." He said, "That's a good hobby." You know, because, you know, you go out and you're in the water, right? That's good for you. Vaishnava sport is swimming. Good for your health, good for your body. He said he could be off doing all sorts of crazy things. So he said, "That's your only problem, then, you know, you guys haven't got problems." He said, Mara said, "That's a good thing." Even a couple of years ago, I was going through some difficult time. You know, my wife left me, the first wife left. You know, I mean, that was a difficult time in my life, materially. It was very challenging. And Burujan Prabhu said to me, he said, "Go surfing, go swimming, you know, have fun, do things, you know, keep yourself buoyant." You know, so to do things in the material, well, that's not wrong. You know, if the guys want to go and play soccer or cricket, it's not like demoniac. So even there was an article on BTG a couple of years ago, written by one of my godbrothers, and he said, you know, okay, if you're going to go surfing, make sure you chant your 16 rounds before you go surfing. I mean, I don't think that's very balanced. That's not a very balanced, you know, opinion. Who cares? Do anyone just go surfing? Who cares? It's not hurting anyone. So if the devotees want to watch a bit of soccer or a bit of cricket or a bit, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I mean, if you're on a very high level, you'll just automatically cease from doing those things. You know, I don't watch those things, but like sometimes if I'm at my brother's house or my mother's house, and it's on, then I'll watch the football and something like, you know, and then I go, you know, after I go home and I say, you know, "Krishna, please forgive me. I watch the football. You know, I'm contaminated, I'm sinful." It's like, what's the big deal? Just watch the football. But we shouldn't take it. So it shouldn't become, you know, and sometimes I see a devotee chanting their rounds while they're watching the football. That's not good. Yeah, things like that, that's bogus. But to have a little bit of, you know, relaxation time, that's not. And I think in this kind, it has to be a little bit more balanced. Because sometimes we preach these whole, you hear devotees, they preach these things. Like, you know, you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't play soccer, and you shouldn't, you know, watch cricket, and you shouldn't like that. That's I don't think that's realistic. Yeah, and Bhakti Vijayapurna Maharaj, he just said, "So what's the problem? Guy goes surfing." He goes, "That's good." Just so happens Maharaj was a surfer before he became a devotee. But I don't think he's probably hasn't, I mean, I don't know, but he probably hasn't done it for 20 or 30 or 40 years, I don't know. I don't know, maybe sometimes in Puri he goes off and, yeah, when we're in Puri we go body surfing and things. Yeah, that's okay. We don't get out the boards and, you know, start going crazy, but, you know, a bit of relaxation's not bad for a devotee. I play tennis. Every week I play tennis. Yeah, once a week I'll go and I'll play tennis. It's, you know. So, you know, please don't tell the GBC or... There's nothing wrong with that. My main problem, I can't find people who are good enough to play. That's not looking at anyone. And so, problem finding the decent opponents.
Oh, is that a challenge?
Any other points?
Seawater
is
really good.
What's that? Seawater is very good for the health. Yeah. At last, on the week, on Saturday and Sunday, I went into the ocean. Yeah, it's very good for the health to go in the ocean. It's actually a Vaishnava sport. Swimming is a Vaishnava sport. So. Okay. Does that answer your question sufficiently? Devotees should just be balanced. Yeah, sometimes we get like, it's all demoniac to go swimming or something. It's like, you know. Especially when we're dealing with our kids. You know, sometimes we say to our kids, you know, like, someone said to me, I won't say who, but the greyhouse said to me, he said, my son watched Batman. And I was like, I've seen it, it's good, it's a good movie. That's the problem. Yeah, it's like, oh, my son watched Batman. It's like, oh my God, it's like, what's the big deal? It's not a big deal. I mean, yeah, if the kid's watching, you know, every day he's watching videos and all that, okay, that's too extreme. But, you know, if they go and see a movie or something, it's like, not a big deal. It's like my daughter's on school holiday, so I'll go and take her to see a film. She wants to see some cartoon or something, some movie, which I have no interest in whatsoever, right? But because, you know, I'm trying to be a good father, I'll take her to see. It's not like, you know. Yeah, and then I'll chance 64 rounds the next day to make up for it. So it's not a big deal. These things are not big deals. So. Okay, 32. Okay, which verse are we on? 23. Kamsa begged, "My dear sister and brother-in-law, please be merciful to such a poor-hearted person as me. Since both of you are saintly persons, please excuse my atrocities." Having said this, Kamsa fell at the feet of Vasudeva and Devaki, his eyes full of tears of regret. Fully believing in the words of the goddess Durga, Kamsa exhibited his familial affection for Devaki and Vasudeva by immediately releasing them from their own iron shackles. When Devaki saw her brother actually repentant while explaining ordained events, she was relieved of all anger. Similarly, Vasudev was also free from anger. Smiling, he spoke to Kamsa as follows. O great personality, Kamsa, only by the influence of ignorance does one accept the material body and bodily ego. What you have said about this philosophy is correct. Persons in the bodily concept of life, lacking self-realization, differentiate in terms of this is mine and this belongs to another. Persons with this vision of differentiation are imbued with the material qualities, lamentation, jubilation, fear, envy, greed, illusion, and madness. They are influenced by the immediate cause, which they are busy counteracting, because they have no knowledge of the remote, supreme cause, the personality of Godhead. Shukadeva Goswami continued, thus having been addressed in purity by Devaki and Vasudeva, who were very much appeased, Kamsa felt pleased, and with their permission, he entered his home. So basically, Kamsa is just being hypocritical. So the basic message of the Bhagavatam here is that you must practice what you preach. Your sadacha, which means your activities, and your preaching must be consistent. No? Whereas he has no potency. He's saying all the perfect things, he's quoting the Bhagavad Gita, but there's no potency there. No? Because he's a demon, and he's acting the wrong way. So tomorrow night we'll finish the chapter. Srila Prabhupada ki? Jai.